I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's been a terrific debate in the arts community here in town about diversity in the theater. That discussion is ongoing, and perhaps down the line we can talk about it on this program. For now, though, we discuss a new production of Paul Zindel's The Effects of Gamma Rays on Man and the Moon Marigolds, which runs the 18th through to the 28th of November in the heart of Vancouver's Chinatown. Chris Lam is the co-artistic producer of Red Current Marigolds Collective, a theatrical equity co-op formed to produce this production. He joins me now to talk about the show, the ethnically diverse cast, the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, and the Vancouver theater scene, and this discussion on diversity. Chris Lam is a noted performer in town who's attended Douglas College and Capilano University. Mr. Lam directs and designs this production. The venue is the Skylight Gallery at 163 East Pender Street. Tickets can be had at marigolds.brownpapertickets.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Chris Lam. Mr. Lam, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So we'll talk about this diversity discussion in a moment, the one that's gone on in this town. But was it from that inspired this production?
I don't think initially that was the inception of it. But, you know, my producing partner, Lisa Neptuno, we were just sort of sitting around and we were, you know, thinking of shows that we could possibly do together, you know, because we wanted to do a project for a while. And we shopped around for some titles. And then she came to me with The Effect of Gamma Rays. And I was like, oh, I haven't read that in, you know, years. Like, I read it in high school. And, you know, and it resonates with me. And I didn't really think about it for a very long time. And part of that was stimulated by my rehearsals that I was doing for another show in Chinatown, actually at the PTC, the Playwrights Theater Center rehearsal space. And because there's somewhere on Gore and Union, you know, I was walking around Chinatown most of the time, and I was kind of struck with nostalgia and, you know, and also just melancholy, I guess, you know, just sort of having grown up in East Van and having sort of gone and been to Chinatown with my grandparents and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see the state that it's in, and that sort of weird state of being sort of like old Chinatown and new Chinatown. You know, it's weird because you get all these sort of gentrified areas and sort of newer developments, and then there's still these facades of, you know, basically landmark kind of, you know, buildings, and you know, essentially, I think a lot of the historic stuff is still intact. But, you know, there's a lot of new businesses, and, you know, Chinese businesses are sort of depleting, and, you know, there's just a new type of blood coming in, and so that's that, and just thinking about the effect of gamma rays, and I was like, well, it'd be interesting to do a play where, you know, obviously it was probably traditionally cast with an all Caucasian cast. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, maybe it'd be interesting to do this play with an all Asian cast, and you know, and see how that goes. So I read through the script again, and you know, I just sort of made sure I tried to find things that were not going to conflict with, you know, with the story in terms, mm-hmm, of like specific race issues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly enough, the play actually really doesn't have a lot of specific parameters. I mean, it's a very universal story about a family, you know, up against adversity and, you know, sort of like little personal tragedies and things like that. And you know, so pretty much, you know, I was sort of given a kind of license to sort of say, okay, well, in reinterpreting it, why not set it sort of, you know, in Vancouver, in Chinatown, with an all-Asian family. And at the same time, there was a few people that I've wanted to work with as well. And, you know, I started to cast as I started to, you know, finalize the concept, the conceit of the whole show. You know, so it just, everything kind of aligned, you know.
Yeah.
By the time.
So you have these five performers in the show. Mm-hmm. And we've seen them in previous productions of, around town, haven't we?
Yes, yeah. Three of them are recent, actually two of them are recent Studio 58 grads, mm-hmm. Julie Leung and Anae West. Lisa Nepino had graduated from Studio 58, but, you know, she's primarily doing film and TV now, but she still does, but she's still very active in theater. And then there's also Laura Ong, who also is kind of, I would say she's a bit of a staple in terms of, you know, an ethnic performer in Vancouver who has, I guess, has done a lot of work, you know, as an actress doing, you know, roles that were primarily, you know, written specifically for an with an Asian or race specific kind of issue, and mm-hmm. but she's been busy, and you know, and it's weird because I was talking to her about how, you know, 30 years ago or even 20 years ago, if I was transplanted at that time as an Asian performer, I don't know if I'd still have the same opportunities. So, you know, she seemed to pave a way for a lot of opportunities, or she was able to give herself the opportunities. And you know, I've noticed that her name comes up a lot in original casts or new works that were mm-hmm. written, you know, a couple of years ago. So yeah, I would say she's in the fabric of the Vancouver theater scene for sure.
So for people listening to us who aren't familiar with Paul Zindel's work, it's a story of a mother and her two daughters. Is that right?
That's right.
And so what's the mother's deal? I mean, you've moved the show to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
What are the challenges that they're facing? I mean, is it set 40 years ago or is it set today?
Well, there's more of a heightened kind of sense to the show. There's no rigid kind of timeline. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a bit timeless, you know. So,
yeah.
I certainly didn't want to just set it back in the 70s when it was written. So, you know, part of it, there's going to be, you know, things where it feels kind of old and kind of more contemporary. So the thing about this family is, you know, it's a single mother raising her two daughters. One of them is withdrawn and slightly passive, and the other one, you know, a little bit more precocious and rebellious, but had suffered some mental health issues, and so she sort of, yeah, and then she basically takes care of this nanny character for $50 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of, I guess there's a bit of a caregiver kind of thing going on. I guess that's how they would supplement their income.
Yeah.
But her thing was she wants to open up a store, you know, and run a tea shop, you know. So they're kind of stuck in this weird rut, you know. They're very, I guess, middle class, you know, and they're definitely not like impoverished or anything like that. But you know, they're struggling, and they're, you know, and they're certainly not affluent. So you know, they're just literally in this weird stasis of just nothing's really happening. You know, they're just kind of going through the motions of every day. And obviously, they've had a lot of setbacks in the past. Her being divorced and then widowed, and having to sort of raise her daughters, who obviously one has some mental issues, and also all her dreams and desires were not fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Because of something that happened to her in the past. So she's constantly sort of haunted by the past, and that's definitely, you know, the thing that's sort of holding her back, you know.
And so the story, I should say, because you've obviously taken to producing it, I mean, it remains relevant today, doesn't it? These challenges that the family goes through, I mean, they're ones that an audience would relate to, especially in the space that you're performing it.
Yeah, for sure. And that was just one of those happy accidents, too, you know. I was researching some images of, you know, immigrants, Chinese immigrants who were living in Chinatown or even in the States too, in the Chinatown area. And, you know, they're sort of living in these sort of really weird makeshift kind of studio kind of, you know, obviously they're paying fairly low rates for, you know, and living in these sort of housing right. situations. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I certainly don't know the full experience of what that is like, but, you know, obviously it does exist, and, you know, and people obviously must live in those kind of situations. And I thought, well, this family probably does exist, you know, and they're all living under the same, in one room, and they, you know, they have a very, very modest budget or something like that, and you know, yeah.
In terms of this discussion on diversity in the theater, I mean, you've talked about how this show has an ethnically diverse cast. For people listening to this who might not have been following what's been going on in the theatrical community in this town, the resulting conversation that was provoked the night of the Jesse Awards, as someone who is a member of the theatrical community in this town, have you noticed a change, say, in the attitude of what's been going on here?
Well, I went to a town hall meeting where after the initial letter, there was a letter that had circulated
yeah.
about, you know, sort of changing this face in the theater scene, and you know, this is definitely this will be an ongoing conversation. You know, it was literally like going to the meeting and then everyone, you know, sort of, we suddenly opened up a dialogue and, you know, like, this is just the tip of the iceberg, you know. From the letter writers' entry point, it was really, they were talking about systemic racism, you know. And they were just sort of saying how, you know, systemically it has sort of created these limitations and these sort of boundaries and things and yeah, it's probably really hard to describe right now. But, you know, other than that, the fact that there is an open dialogue
yeah.
and that people will continue to sort of talk about what's the best way to work together on this, I'm glad that's happening, you know. It's
yeah.
definitely a start, you know. And I don't know if in my lifetime it's actually going to, you know, be equal in that sense.
Sure.
Or, yeah, but, you know, for a city like Vancouver, where it's very multicultural, and yet theater as an art form here is not as prevalent or as thriving, you know. I think people do appreciate theater, and they're excited to see theater, but it's not ingrained or it's not inherent in the culture here, and I think there's a bit of that imbalance. You know, it's kind of how do we popularize the art form again, and how do we make it really relevant and make people, you know, obviously pay tickets to go and see theater. You know, obviously from an economic standpoint, it's a bit challenging.
Sure.
You know, and so I find that, you know, it's trying to find that balance, you know, and I think that's where the conversation is probably kind of going. You know, it's sort of, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, but for me, I find that, you know, I've been able to, you know, do some fairly successful pieces of theater in Vancouver and felt included
uh-huh.
and felt, you know, like, you know, there has been some opportunities, and at the same time, maybe for someone else, maybe that's not really the case, but you know, it's always nice to try to open it up a little bit more, and especially with this collective, we're not a theater company or anything like that. I mean, this is definitely just a passion project, and it's just a you know, sort of just this one-off right now, but it's, you know, the whole point was just to sort of do a presentation of this play where we can see that representation,
mm-hmm.
you know, on you know, full scale, you know, so, yeah.
And so how does it feel? I mean, we're talking about 10 days before the show opens. Is this something that could happen again?
Absolutely. I mean, producing theater is very challenging, especially when it's hard to find the funds. But, you know, I guess when I found the play, I had a very specific feeling, you know, and then that evolved into sort of like a concrete concept. And I felt very confident with it, too, and also with the people that I was working with. So, you know, I think with any theater production, there's always a lot of challenges as you lead up to opening night, and you want everything to sort of go smoothly, and you want all the process to have all the right elements. Absolutely. In the future, I would definitely love to continue doing this format of theater again. This sort of the mandate of the collective to sort of basically include that sort of multifaceted, multiracial, multicultural kind of face onto classic and new works.
Right.
You know, it does a lot of different things because, you know, it does change meaning a lot, especially if the play was very specific in terms of its race, mm-hmm. race issues or political issues. I'm just happy with this play that there's just a more universal kind of human story, a very, you know, that story about that, about the condition, which, you know, which is probably why the play has been very successful for so long.
Right.
And it's almost a weird full circle for me because the very first play I ever directed was The Glass Menagerie, which this play has a lot of echoes. And I wouldn't be surprised if Zindel actually, you know, wrote it as a sort of homage, or he had been influenced by The Glass Menagerie, because there are definitely a lot of parallels. So this is a story that I feel I'm very familiar with already in right. terms of just the play form and just this story about a family, you know.
As a director, Chris, do you advise your actors to see the film?
I usually tell them you can watch it at, you know, at your own discretion. You mm-hmm. know, if you're the kind of person who feels that if you get influenced and that sort of becomes detrimental to your process, then don't watch it. I watch, you know, every single version of whatever play that or musical that I'm working on just to sort of, you know, tap into someone else's sort of process of how they did something or what their concept was or, you know, how they play the beats and stuff like that. And I don't feel that their influence is going to hinder my process at all. In fact, I always try and, you know, watch as much theater or see a lot of art or, you know, be involved, with as many art forms as I can to sort of help influence me, because certainly nothing really is that original. So I think it's just it just changes, and I'm more than happy to sort of, you know, honor certain things that I see that I really like, and or I can just be inspired and I'll just run with that.
And I understand the next thing for you is a Christmas Carol at the Pacific Theater. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you do that as a radio play, I'm told.
Yeah, it's a radio version of it. Last year I did a version of It's a Wonderful Life that was written by Peter Church, who also did this adaptation of Christmas Carol, and it was directed by Sarah Rogers. And I've never done a radio play before, and it was really fun in terms of just playing with that kind of conceit. The thing is, usually with radio plays is, you know, you kind of do it in concert, right? You kind of just sort of stand in front of music stands, and you have a mic, and you just sort of do that, and just it's more reliant on voice and text and maybe some sound effects. This was an interesting production because it was sort of staged, it was almost semi-staged in the sense that we were walking around with scripts in hand, but there was the movement. And it's interesting for the audience who was watching it, you know, the conceit is we're, you know, a studio cast doing a radio play,
mm-hmm.
but we're also kind of acting it out as these characters too. So it was kind of like, you know, several different layers, you know, so... it's really fun. And with Christmas Carol, this year I'm coming back as a musical director as well as a performer. So I'll be doing voices again, but also playing the piano and help operate the Foley sounds,
right,
and stuff like that. And yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, we've seen a number of productions done like this over the years. And what surprises me as someone who does radio on the internet is just how radio remains relevant in the discourse today, despite the internet, despite technology and the sort.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, the fact that you're doing that on stage is just, I mean, it brings us this story that we all know, I guess, and in a different sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations on your work with the effect of gamma rays. I know a lot of people in this town are waiting for that, as they're waiting for the production at the Pacific Theater this winter. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Well, the website for more, marigolds.brownpapertickets.com. That's where you can get tickets for the run, which is the 18th to the 28th of November. The show is at the Skylight Gallery, 163 East Pender. Chris Lamb, the director and designer of the effect of gamma rays on Man in the Mood, Marigolds, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.